session number 27345, reel 8.
So, short of reel 8. So, you returned and you were starting to do more mine laying off the Norwegian coast?
Yes, because it was taken longer. We knew where we were going, because, fortunately enough, we were told that we were going to lay mines up near the Norwegian coast, now that Norway was in the war. And so it carried on.
You mentioned you had air cover.
Well, we had air cover during the day. At certain times of the day, the air cover used to come across. I suppose they were just watching for us all the time. I don't know if we had submarine cover. We might have done, I don't know. Nobody told me that much, but we do know that we did go over to like Heligoland, and then we gradually extended because we knew we were going further and further and further. And that's how we knew about the Altmark and also about the Battle of Narvik and why Narvik was such a important to him, because they were getting all their ore being shipped from Narvik. It was the only way they could get it down to Germany.
Was one of the things with the captain, you know, when you went into the fjord where you had your experience of falling into the water from the buoy when you were hit on the head, do you think the captain was slightly frustrated that you'd been told to lay off and not go into Narvik with the H-bolts?
Yes. Yeah. I believe he wanted to go in. We all had this feeling, everybody on board had the feeling that he wanted to go in. Although he only had two guns, he still thought he could use them. And possibly he could have done. We could have had a go from a distance, I don't know. But we did go in, and as I say, we tied up at this buoy, and all revolutions were just keeping our nose. And we could have been away within a minute, because you had the slip wire on, and the slip wire would have just been knocked and gone. But I don't want to sit on another Norwegian buoy, thank you very much.
So how long did your mine laying go on from?
We started around about November, and we carried on right up until Dunkirk. We were coming back from a mine laying operation when we had orders to divert on the Sunday to Dunkirk.
Can you take me through that step by step? What happened next?
Through Dunkirk. Right. When we finally arrived at Dunkirk, I just could not believe it. Could not believe it. What I was seeing. I was seeing the men on the beaches, because we were going up alongside the beach. We didn't go in the harbour because you weren't allowed. It was all, and there were other boats there before us. We arrived on a Sunday afternoon and we saw what was happening and we laid off. And the small boats that were ferrying them came out to us. And then when darkness came, we were coming back to the UK with them. Then we'd come out again. And what we were doing at the first Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, possibly Thursday, we were creeping down the coast and up the coast to Dunkirk with our boats lowered, and we were picking up the stragglers off the shore. Because, I mean, we couldn't go in, not destroy. And you've got to give me a minute. I was in one of the whalers that went ashore. Now, the coxswain was a leading seaman, and he'd had his instructions. It was only to pick up X amount of men. I don't know what the amount was, whether it was 15, 20, 25. I haven't got a clue. But a whaler doesn't carry all that amount. And we went in, and I was in the... I only did one trip, because it was too harrowing, and so they were getting different men, different ships' company, men of the ship's company were taking turns. And I was on the bow because, as I say, I was a bit of a titch, and I could handle the bow quite well. In actual fact, I was in the Racing Whalers crew as the bowman, but that's another story. Anyway, we'd go in, and the soldiers would wade out to us, and we would take them on board. Then you'd still have soldiers alongside of you, and their hands would be on the gunwale, and you could hear them saying, "Oh, go on, Jack. One more, please, Jack. I'm only small. Make room for one more." But the coxswain said, "No, we've got the quota." And I believe that some of the oarsmen further down, I mean, I couldn't see, because you couldn't get in from the bow in any case because it was that much higher. And I believe that some of those oarsmen had to hit the hands of the soldiers to make them let go. And I could hear the, oh, yeah, and I didn't know what was going on at the time till we got back, and then they told me that they hit their hands to make them leave the boat, so I said they'd tip the boat over.
It sounds quite dangerous, actually, that many hands not pulling on the side of the
boat. It was, because the soldiers that we got in, we were pushed over that side to counteract the pulling. And, well, anybody, you can't understand it. There's a boat, you've got a chance to get on it, you want to get on it. But, as I say, I only done one trip.
How many trips are going out, though, in the day? How many times is the whaler going out?
During the night, you'd have two whalers going out, you'd do about four trips. And then before dawn, up boats, and away you go back. And then if you had to oil or anything, like you do necessaries, then you come back again during the day, and you would pick up from the small boats and the other boats that want you to give it to you. And
were you being supplied by the small ships that were supplying between Dunkirk, the beaches and the destroyer?
Mm. And the small ships used to come and put you on board, and that's it. Until Friday, and we knew that things were getting very, very critical because it was getting near the end. And that is when I believe that the destroyers were ordered in. There was hardly any destroyers been ordered in. It was mostly large boats and like paddle steamers and things like that against the mole. And I think Friday was the first time that the actual destroyers had really gone in alongside. And we were ordered in 11 o'clock on a Friday morning. Because all the time there's air raids going on all the time. I was still attached to the torpedo party, and the torpedo party was in the well of the ship waiting to take the soldiers off. And all the time our anti-aircraft guns, that weren't doing much good, were firing, and then a dive bomber decided he would take a liking to us. He dive bombed us. He struck in between the two funnels where the anti-aircraft guns were. One was there. And the other one went down the funnel. Two bombs. Good job they were smallish and not big ones. But they blew part of the bottom, and we started to take on water. We didn't know this till afterwards, but we had to get away from the mole, because if we'd have sunk alongside the mole, no other ships could have got in. So we had enough power to reverse away from the mole back out into the sea, and then we lost all power. But then, in the shape of a Port of London 70-ton tug, pulled up alongside of us and shouted to the captain, "Can I be of any assistance, sir?" And the skipper said, "Yes, you can take us in tow." And while we were taken in tow, we had a high-level bomber try to hit us, and that little old tug one dropped alongside that little tug, and she went like that.
Up and down.
Up and down. She never let go. And she towed us all the way back. But maybe you would just like me to go back a little bit on what I saw on the beaches.
Yeah, that would be good.
Because I think no words can explain it. They were just targets. They were just targets. These fighters come over and machine gunned the soldiers. All this soldier that couldn't even return anything back at them was just deliberately machine gunning them. And then the bombers would come over and bomb it, and all you would see was legs, arms, heads go up. I never want to see it again.
Fire away.
I think I've just said that he missed us, but anyway. By then, we were beginning to take water, and the bow was going down very, very, not fast, but because we had no power. But the electricians got the auxiliary power going, so we did have that, and we had tea and meals. But
what would the auxiliary power when the ship was that badly damaged? What did you have?
He had a diesel. Have a diesel, and you get that going and gives you the power. Because then, sometimes when you're in harbour, you can come off of steam and go on to diesel, and it saves your boilers, you see. But anyway, they've got the heating and lighting that come. And then the bodies that were laying in the well of the ship that was standing there ready to take the chaps on. Because the bomb hitting the anti-aircraft guns exploded there, and those people standing there waiting to fetch the soldiers on caught the blast. Some of those were laying on the ground and they were bare. The force of the explosion had ripped all their clothes off. But the terrible thing of that was that the anti-aircraft guns, there's the funnel there and there's the funnel there, and they're in between. And they're there and they're there. Now, the ammunition for those was close up against a bulkhead, and they were in boxes because it was got there. And what had happened, as the bomb exploded on that anti-aircraft gun deck, some hot fragments went into the boxes of bullets, and the bulkhead acted as a breech, and they exploded, and the bullets came out like that. And I reckoned it was all those bullets that killed nearly 10 men. Because they were there, and it just riddled. The after smokestack, after funnel, it was just peppered where all the bullets had exploded. And that's how we lost so many. We lost 41 altogether over there. And anyway,
how long did it take you to get back being told by
he picked us up about 12 o'clock, and we finally got into Chatham Dockyard and into the dry dock. We went straight into dry dock at 9 o'clock. It took us 9 hours of time where we could have done the job in about 3 hours.
And was there still a threat from the Germans while you were on that side of the channel? How far would they have followed you across?
Oh, yes. There were submarines, weren't there, hanging about. We could have got, torpedoed, but we were dead lucky. There was no doubt about it. And when we went through the roads at Sheerness, that's a part I shall never forget. I always remember. We went through the roads about 8 o'clock. It was only about a couple of hours from Sheerness to Chatham. Every ship, merchant or naval, lines the upper decks. And the sirens were blowing and they cheered us, and bosuns and whistles were going. And we stood on the main deck, all lined up as we went all the way through to take the signal. Always forget it. Cheered us like blazes. because we were getting lower and lower and lower. And always stuck in my mind that is shouting at every ship. It was great. I know it was bad time, but you know, it gave me a sort of a thrill. But at any rate, we get to Chatham, and we went straight into dry dock, and we were taken off. All ship's company was immediately taken off.
Were you aware, obviously, at the time of Dunkirk, how many men you've managed to get off the beaches?
No. And when we found out how many did, we didn't know how many we had actually bought off. But when the final total came, we was amazed. Never realised that we'd got so many off in what, 6 days, 7 days? And so they took us all ashore, gave us all a shower, clean clothing and food and something to eat, and then they showed us into a Nissen hut with all the beds, you know, the old naval iron bedsteads, and that's it. But not a lot of us went to sleep, actually. We couldn't sleep very, very much. And in the morning, we had breakfast, and then we mustered, and they took the roll of the ship's company. And then that's when we found out we'd lost 41. And then we marched back to the ship. She was in dry dock. Every sign of bodies had been removed, and we was allowed onto the mess decks. And they started to repair us.
Were you standing by her while the repairs took
place? Yes, yes. They didn't. The ship's company didn't disband at all. We was in there nearly about 8 weeks, I think. About 8 weeks, yeah. July. Yes, about 8 weeks.
So you mentioned the damage on top and where the casualties have been caused. What was the damage below deck like?
The splits. The plates had split and the rivets had sprung. And that's how she was leaking. There was no hole, but it had sprung the bottom. And of course the rivets were leaking, and that's what they had to do.
Was that caused by the bomb that had dropped down the funnel?
Also dropped down the funnel because the boiler exploded at the same time.
So were some of the casualties in the boiler room?
Were stokers, yes. Yes.
And was there any other damage to the ship at all that had occurred?
All on the superstructure was all completely gone. And blown to pieces, the funnel. There wasn't much left of the funnel, actually. And we was in there, and we thought we was going to be sent into barracks, but no. We stood alongside her all the time. I think the captain pulled some strings, I think, because he wanted his same ship's company. Because when we finally sailed again, and we finished repairing us on the Monday, we sailed out of Chatham and into the roads, because you have to ammunition ship, provision ship and everything else. The captain cleared lower deck and told us how proud he was that he'd still got his own ship's company.
Had you had some replacements for the casualties at that stage?
Oh yes. We had new replacements and everything else, because they all wanted to know what had happened. Of course, I thought, I'm a bit of an oldie now. I can tell a bit. and that was that.
Where had you actually been when the bombing had occurred? Where were you at that time?
I was down the shell room. I was told this, you know, about the dive bombers coming over and taking their liking down about. I heard the bang, and I was down in the shell room. There were three of us down there because we was at action stations. We heard this bang, and there was a leading seaman there, and he said, "I think we'd better go up top and have a look, see what's happening." So we got out the shell room, put the shell room cover down and watertight, tightened it right up, and went up onto the upper deck. Because
were you relieved that you'd actually said, "Let's get out from in the shell room" at that time when you thought?
I was. I didn't know what was happening. I was frightened. We all were frightened. And if anybody says they weren't frightened, don't believe them. Because if they're not frightened, they're madmen.
And can I ask how the ship's company take to being bombed? Do you take it as an affront almost that your ship has been attacked in that way?
Oh yes, oh yeah. And that's when you start cursing. But I can honestly say this: I saw them what some of these Germans did, and I saw what happened. And I cursed them and everything, but I never got to the stage of hating. I never hated them. I don't think it's in my body to hate. I hope not, anyway. I haven't got much longer to go, anyway, to start hating anybody. But that's when you let loose your FBs and so forth. You really let it out. It's the only way you can go. If you hold it in, which I have done for over 60 years. I mean, I was married to my wife for 59 years and 8 months, and she only knew a small part of what happened, because I just didn't want to talk about it. But I can talk about it, and when... As I said to you there, it's come out at last. It's the first time I've spoken about it.
But you sound like you're very proud to be a crew member on board Ivanhoe.
I was. At that stage. I was proud of what we'd done. I was very proud to be a soldier, a sailor.
Did you try and instill that into the new draftees who'd arrived on board the ship?
Oh, yes. They wanted to know what had happened and everything else. And of course, they thought they were coming on to a fighting ship. But they weren't. They were coming on to a fighting ship that's had its teeth withdrawn. Because the men that we lost were actual gunnery ratings, torpedomen, signalmen, and all that. Because when we became a mine layer, there was two spare gun crews for a start. There was two sets of torpedoman's tubes for a start. You backed all the others up, you see. And of course some of those were there waiting to help the troops on and so forth, and some of those were killed. There was one signal was killed, you see, and some gunnery ratings and torpedoman. Because they all had to be replaced as they were. There were gunnery ratings, they had to be replaced as gunnery, and signalmen and torpedomen, they had to be replaced in their what they were.
And the ship was going to go back to its role as a mine layer still, was it?
Yes.
So once you'd rearmed in the Rhodes, did you go back to Ingham?
That's where we sailed. We sailed on the Monday afternoon because of the tide in the Rhodes on Tuesday. To ammunition ship, everything must get out of the way because the ammunition lighter comes alongside. She's got a lot of ammunition on board.
So all ships are ammunitioned outside of the port, aren't they?
Oh, you don't ammunition ship inside a port. Not inside jetties and things like that. The ammunition lighter comes to you. You are outside. In case anything happens and it blows, I mean, you could blow the harbour to bits, couldn't you?
So the Immingham, where you got the mines from, was that a special case almost?
Yes,
for the place?
Special.
Do that?
That's special there, because it was a mine laying base, and all the mines were underground.
So you returned back to mine laying duties after the repairs, did you? And was it the same runs again to Heligoland or up to Norway?
And he did one trip. We never come back from it.